two giant goofballs is shot live in front of a streaming audience.
Welcome to Two Giant Goofballs, a New York Giants podcast. Are you a goofball that loves Giants football? If so, sit back and relax.
Except you, that person driving. Sit up and keep your eyes on the road.
Your ears, though, can still listen as we talk about the team that both excites and frustrates us so much. And now, here are your goofball hosts, Drew and Rob.
Welcome, fellow goofballs, to Two Giant Goofballs, the New York Giants podcast. I am Drew, joined as always by...
Rob. Let's talk about the good old safety times.
Let's talk about kung fu fighting.
Ho, 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 yeah. Ho.
You know, everybody was fast as lightning. So, yeah, today, guys, we have the safety position to talk about. We're going to run down the top safeties in this upcoming draft. We're going to have all kinds of safeties, deep safeties, box safeties, nickelbacks. Look at this photograph. Every time I do it makes me laugh. I mean, it's just going to be every type of possible safety there is at that point. Because there are those weird ones.
What the hell happened to that helmet hair?
Guy's... But you can get those weird ones occasionally where it's like, okay, this guy's kind of more of a slot corner, but he also goes back and plays safety, but he never goes to the outside. And to me, I count those guys as a safety as well, because they move around, that the guys you're putting in your diamond or nickel packages. And those guys are guys that you got to love having in the NFL, because if you have those guys, you are totally, totally at the advantage at that point, because not everybody has that.
Silly.
Yeah, not everybody has that. And that's the thing. Versatility is one of those things that if you have that, you have such a leg up, it's not even funny. You really do. And, you know, it's one of those things that we've had at times as Giant fans, and other times, quite frankly, we haven't. So, you know, I think it's something that we want to get again, and I think it's that we need to get with some, you know, players who's listed, guys. We lost our two of the three, I guess you'll say, biggest stars in our secondary this offseason, in Adoree Jackson and Xavier Kinney. So don't think that safety is something to sleep on, that we're not going to go ahead and possibly, you know, go ahead and try to add, because that's a position that we need another starter potentially at. You know, we got Pinnock at that point there, but who do you want to put next to him? Do you want to put Dane Belton next to him? Do you want to put Javarius Owens and give him a shot to compete with Belton maybe? I mean, there's not one guy that can say that, okay, I'm cool with us losing McKinney because we got this guy. This is the guy who's going to take over.
There was none of that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, again, do we have the worst backups in the league at that point, at that position? No. And I'm not going to sit there and say that, you know. But has any of them stood out where I would go, okay, we're fine losing McKinney, we have so-and-so? No. And, you know, that's one thing I think we don't talk about enough as Giant fans right now. We talk about the loss of McKinney and, you know, what it meant to the team as far as leadership-wise, as far as ability-wise. But, guys, he's gone. And he's been gone now for a while. Yeah. The Packers gave it to X. That's what they did. They gave him a lot of money. So, you know, we got to figure out now as a team, and obviously it's not like us personally, it's, you know, it's obviously Joe Shane and all, but we got to figure out how to replace that production, because that doesn't just go away where it's like, oh, we don't, you know, we lost this guy. Oh, well, we just got to figure something else out. Like, we lost a really good player, guys. And, you know, I've heard of different veterans that we supposedly the Giants get tied to, but I really think that's the media grasping at straws. It's not like the Giants are bringing guys in for meetings left and right at that point. You know, you don't hear about that kind of stuff, you know. So are they comfortable with Dane Belton? Is this more of a need than some people are talking about? I'm not sure, to be honest with you. I'm really not. I'm kind of torn myself on this because, again, I see the need.
They say that they want Belton to step up. I've heard that. But once again, third off the season with Shane, what does that really mean?
Yeah,
is he gaslighting?
And you could want
does he feel confident?
You could want someone to move up all you want too. That doesn't mean they're going to. That's correct. Part of it. I mean, do we really feel comfortable what we saw of Dane Belton to go, okay, yeah, this is the guy. He's got it. You know, like, I feel like he's been good at times, and especially this year, but I didn't see him in games enough to go, okay, yeah, this guy's got something. You know what I'm saying? Like, he did good with the limited time he had. I'm not trying to knock the kid at that point. But I can't sit there and say that he had all this time, you know?
It's because he did.
He didn't. Not at all. And that's why I'm saying, like, we got to be honest about this conversation here and go, you know what? Maybe this is a position in E that's not talked about enough. One that should be talked about a little more at that point. So, again, we're opening up the discussion here now because it's got to be had, and it's not being had enough at that point. So, again, we're going to be the ones to have it. So, oh, yes. So, we got 10 different safeties we're going to go over, guys. Obviously, I think if the Giants had their pick of the litter, so to speak, here, they're going to go for a deep safety. I think Pinnock works pretty well. It's more of a box safety kind of guy. But we don't get to make that call who gets drafted ahead of us. And I think Pinnock, in a pinch, while it's not, like, you know, the ideal spot for him, because of the fact that he's going to be more veteran than anybody else that you have at that position now to start, if you have to put him in deep, you have to put him in deep. It's not the, you know, the craziest thing at that point. So, all right. So we're going to start off here today with number 10, obviously. We're going to go work our way down. So I'll give you guys a little fair warning. I made a boo-boo. I know it's crazy. I made a boo-boo. But I didn't load the videos in beforehand. This is what happens when I take a nap from work and everything. So we're playing a little bit by guessing here at this point here, because I can see little clips here, but I can't see which one is which. So yeah, I can hit a button like this. But nope, that's not the guy I wanted at that point. So it's like, or I can hit a button. Maybe that's the guy I want. Maybe it's not the guy. And that's the thing. You just don't know at that point. but we're going to have a little fun with this here, because I think I've got it right now. I think we're good. So hopefully my lack of preparation doesn't come back to bite me in the tuchus here. So let's start off with number 10, because that's the guy I actually just hit. Bo Braid out of Maryland. Oh, yes. Bo Braid, again, out of Maryland, 6'1", 210 pounds. Keep in mind, also, former teammate we're talking about, too, of a certain cornerback that we picked up last year. So, kind of an interesting possibility there for that exact reason, you know. Looking at what type of safety he is there. So, I got to make sure everybody, as far as where they lined up here last year. So at the line, he was 41 times. He was in the slot 104 times. He was in as a corner 14 times. He played in the box 369 times. Played deep safety 201 times. This guy's got some versatility to him, you know? But yeah, it's an interesting option for us, I think, especially with the fact that, again, he played with Deontay Banks in college. There's some familiarity there at that point. And I know we talk about familiarity with offensive line guys, but the secondary, it's part of it.
100%.
When you know where the guy behind you is going to be because you play with him enough, you know where he goes, it's an advantage. In 2022, when he played with Deontay Banks, 13 games, 85 tackles, 4 tackles for loss, 2 interceptions, 5 passes defended, and 2 forced fumbles. This past season, 12 games, 75 tackles, 4 tackles for loss, 1 interception, and 6 passes defended, 1 forced fumble. Just a 67.8 PFF grade, though. So there's a lot of potential there, because you see a lot of the skills when you watch the tape. And this is one of those guys that you watch the tape and you see things that are like, okay, if he just did this instead of this, that play would have been much better. If he did this instead of that, that play would have been a whole lot better. I think this is one of those kind of raw athletic talent kind of guys that you're going to have a little patience with. He's a good playmaker. He's got good hip movement. He hits like a linebacker as well. That's the thing I love in a safety. I'm an old school football guy. So this is that guy that's going to hit you like a Steve Atwater kind of guy. You know, you don't care that he's smaller. Beautiful. He's going to go for it.
Beautiful.
Now, he's also got a quick downhill trigger as well. Which is good. If he sees the running back go into a hole at that point there, he's going to run right to shove into that hole at that point there. And that sounded dirty, I know. Oh, well.
Just keep stuffing it.
But yeah, that's where he is. Now, as far as the cons to him, a lot of it really honestly is in the coverage area. And that's where he's grading so low, really. He gets handsy at times. And I don't mean at prom. I mean, he gets, you know, where he's that guy who just like, he gets caught with holding penalties at that point. He gets caught with putting hands where they're not supposed to be at that point. He's guilty of over pursuit in coverage as well. And he tends to give up a lot of big plays. If you look up a lot of the big plays that Maryland gave up, this is the guy that gave them up. So, again, if you're looking for a box safety that almost acts like an extra linebacker, that has the athleticism to cover, but not yet the skills to cover, but you hope can develop into that role, this is an interesting guy overall. I think he should go personally in like the fourth round. I have seen people grade him a lot higher though. And I think the reason why is because what I just said, as much as he's got some downfalls and coverage, they see the athletic ability there. And some people think he'd be coached up. That's a determination. You got to make that in the interview room. You got to figure out what you got. Yeah. You got to figure out if you can do that. I'm not sure if he's got that or not, because I don't know him personally. I haven't talked to the guy. But he's got the natural skills there. And if you can get rid of some of these bad traits, especially the big plays, which I think honestly is part of the over-pursuit issue, really, to be honest, then you could have yourself a decent, nice, you know, young player at that point there that is probably to be mostly a box safety in the NFL, but will move around a little bit and has done that in the past. You concurring?
Yeah, I'm concurring.
Okay, your camera's frozen, so I can't tell.
Let's just have another podcast.
All right,
ventriloquist over here.
Okay, let's go into number nine in that case. Number nine is Cole Bishop. Wasn't that polite of him to wave at us like that? That was very nice.
It was so nice of him. What a nice.
Very courteous. He is from Utah. Utah people are considered usually very nice people. Again, out of Utah, 6'2", 207 pounds. Now, they did not list an age for Cole. He's one of those guys. He joined Utah in 21. So obviously we can assume he was probably 18 at that point there, which means he'd be born in 23, which means he'd be 21 right now. 23, I mean. In 03, so he'd be 21 right now. In 2022, he had 14 games, 83 tackles, 6 tackles for a loss, 1.5 sacks, 1 interception, 3 passes defended, and 1 fumble recovery. This past year, 11 games, 60 tackles, 6.5 tackles for a loss, 3 sacks, 2 interceptions, 4 passes defended, 2 forced fumbles, and 1 fumble recovery there. A 65.6 PFF grade. Are you there, Rob? There you are.
I am. I'm trying to forget my camera.
Yeah. As far as the snaps by position here, so 38 snaps at the line, 97 at the slot, 25 at the corner position, 180 at the box, and 247 at the deep. So, again, a guy with a lot of versatility. And you're going to see that a lot with the guys that we talk about towards the end here because, I've talked about the having that, you know, abilities to play wherever on the field. That's key when you're getting one of the latter guys at this point here that's going to go in one of the mid to late rounds, because they're going to have to probably be a backup to start off their career and earn a potential spot to start later on there. So pros on him: recognizes plays very well. He's very reactive, always moving, and he's a good hitter. This is why they like to put him at the deep safety position there a lot in Utah. As far as the cons, he lacks INTs. Again, we talked about the last 2 years. He had 3 interceptions. If you're playing the box, obviously you're playing the deep safety position as your primary position, you expect more than 3 interceptions.
Let's say hope for
college. Yeah. You know, you want at least 6 at that point, really. As far as, you know, other issues there, he runs into blocks when on the line, and that's an issue. So you put him on the line for 2 reasons. One, to be an extra pass rusher, which, again, he had 4.5 sacks the last 2 years. So he proved he can pass the, you know, can, you know, rush the passer. That's not horrible from a safety position. But he also, you also put him on the line at that point to stack the box when there's an obvious running play. But if you're running into a block, you're not doing much good. You're just canceling yourself out, basically, with whoever you ran into. That's not being helpful. Your job is to not get blocked at that point. So, again, things he needs to work on there. I think third to fourth round is where he's going to end up going at that point there. I think people are going to like his versatility. They're going to like some of the, you know, the raw talent. That's kind of going to be a kind of a theme of this group here. But raw talent they see on him and go, you know what? This is a guy I can develop, and this is a guy that at the very least is going to start off the bat as somebody that I can take off the bench and put anywhere basically on the field in that secondary that we need some help at that time. So, you know, I think a good guy to get overall for that kind of job there. Just don't expect too much of him in the very beginning because he needs work. He's an unfinished product, basically.
Yeah. He needs to go somewhere with a good secondary coach.
Yeah. Well, I wonder who that could be. What if we have someone who has the... Oh, yes. Next up, guys, we have the player that I'm calling my official sleeper of this group. Oh, yes. And not because I took a nap today. But this is a guy that I think most people have rated where if they were doing their own top 10, he wouldn't be in there. But I'm popping him in, and there's a lot of things I like on tape at that point from him. So let's go into it with Malik Mustafa. Did you do Mufasa?
I said Mustafa.
No, Mustafa, not Mustafa. Yeah. Mustafa.
Yeah, I'm not saying Mufasa. I'm saying Mustafa.
Yeah.
I'm saying it like Mufasa.
Kill me. Anyway, out of Wake Forest there, 5'11", 207 pounds there. In 2022, 10 games, 58 tackles, 8 tackles for loss, 3.5 sacks, 3 passes defended, 2 forced fumbles. This past year, 12 games, 80 tackles, 5 tackles for loss, half a sack, 1 interception, 2 passes defended, at a 79.6 PFF grade. This is a guy that a lot of people are guessing is going to go around the fifth round guy. I've heard a lot of that. And this is part of the reason I wanted to bring this guy to our attention specifically. Because like I said, I need a safety. This guy looked damn good in college. I like the tape. I like what I saw at that point. As long as you are giving him the proper position, there are some limitations he has, which we'll go over in a minute there. But if you can get a guy like this in the fifth round that could potentially start, I think he honestly has that ability to potentially start. I think he's that good. As far as his snaps by position, 27 at the line, 144 at the slot, 9 at corner, 327 at the box, 163 as a deep. And I think the box is really where his home should be. He's got really good instincts. He's a good tackler. He's got a high motor. This is that guy that just runs out there and energizes all over the field there. And he blitzes. Like I said, he didn't have that much there in 23. They kind of cut it down a little bit there and how often they were going to blitz him. But they blitzed him quite often at the prior year in 22, and he got 3.5 sacks out of it for his work there. That's a good sack number there out of a safety. As far as the cons, range due to athleticism, and that's why I don't think deep is a good spot to put him. This guy is not the fastest on the field. This is, you know, there's typically most people get put into two different categories. You get put in the category of this is a guy who really tries hard, is a smart football IQ guy. And you go, this is a guy who's just naturally gifted. He's the first part.
Yeah.
He's not the latter. He's the guy who tries his butt off at that point and just has high football IQ.
Yeah. What I liked about him, like when he got in the box, like he understood where the ball was going. He understood the angles and if it was going to get caught, like how to get there the fastest, because he wasn't the fastest. Like he really knew how to utilize the field position he was at and getting the best out of it.
Yeah, he uses intelligence in football to go ahead and kind of make up for some of the lack of athleticism.
Yeah.
He's also does have short arms, got a little T-Rex arms there. Yeah, exactly. So again, that we talk about that a lot with linemen, but it matters also when you're talking about, you know, people that are in coverage. They're jumping up to try to pat the ball down. But even also, people forget too, sometimes is that punch those first 5 yards at that point. You see those corners, they're punching just same as the lineman does. You know, if you can do that well and you can knock them off their where they want to go at that point, that's a huge advantage for you.
Especially like if you're playing against a team that has a quarterback, like sort of say like Mahomes or a system quarterback. I shouldn't say Mahomes, like a system quarterback where they know like 1, 2, 3, 4, throw it over here. If you knock that receiver off 3 steps, he's out of the step of the ball.
And listen, every receiver has those couple of routes they love to run on a regular basis. And you all know that. We all know that. But part of what makes them good at it is because of the fact that it's hard to knock them off their route. They're very good. They're very steady with it at that point. They got good, you know, moves at that point to keep it going. Again, this is not the guy who can punch someone out of that position because he just got those short arms. The only other issue I really saw with him, he's a little overly aggressive at times. And I think that is him trying to make up for the issues he does have there as far as the athleticism. But every so often, he just bites on a play at that point. And he's running like a straight line to the spot. And then all of a sudden, the guy jukes just a little bit. And he can't put on the brakes and stop to ship back over again. And allows a bigger play than it was going to be otherwise. Because he was overly aggressive and overly went for the arms. Yeah. But he overly just went for where he thought the guy was going to go, as opposed to letting the play come to him to a degree, you know? But again, I think you saw good things on him in college. Wake Forest isn't exactly the largest school, obviously, and they're going to get some hits because of that. And I think that's part of why he takes hitting. Again, I don't think he's going to be the best coverage guy. He's more of a box safety, which again is going to give him a hit in this draft as well. But I think there's a place for a guy like Mustafa in the NFL, and I think it's going to be more of a box safety kind of guy at that point. And I think it's going to be a good player. I really do. I think this is going to be a guy that you look at later on a couple of years ago. Why did he get drafted so low?
Yeah, whatever team that picks up Malik got him at a steal because he got him in the fifth round when he could have been a third round pick.
Exactly. All righty, number 7. And this is a guy that a lot of people will probably remember this name there. He had some big, big moments here at Georgia, and that's Tyke Smith. All righty. So, again, I said out of Georgia there, played there the last the last 3 years. Prior to that, played 2 years over West Virginia.
Take me home.
You skipped the line.
I did.
You did. He threw me for a loop. I couldn't remember the next line after the next. I was going to say, take me home the next one. Anyway, 5'10", 205 pounds, 23 years old. Last couple of years there has become kind of a bigger part of Georgia's defense there. In 14 games, just 28 tackles. 2.5 tackles for loss, 2 sacks, and 1 pass deflected. Now, this past season, 14 games, 70 tackles, 2 sacks, 4 interceptions, 2 passes defended, and 84 PFF grade. Again, 84 PFF grade in the SEC. Let me be very specific. The main reason why this guy is only at 7 is, to be very frank, I don't think anybody knows where to put him. I don't want to say he's positionless. I'm not saying he's Isaiah Simmons, but his best position might be actually as more of a slot corner than a safety, but he moves around so much that he gets put in as a safety at that point. So at the line 62 times, we talk about the 4 sacks in the last 2 seasons. He spent 62 plays at the line, 434 plays last year at the slot position. That's his highest one by far. 29 at corner. 87 at deep safety. At box safety, and 18 plays at deep safety. You're right there, Rob. We're losing again.
A little bit there. Oh dear.
He's embarrassed.
Oh gosh.
So pros on him: good instincts, good tackler. He's smart in coverage at that point. You watch him in coverage, and he plays like a. When he's on the slot, he plays almost like an elite outside corner. But for some reason, he goes on the outside. He doesn't play it like that. You put him in the safety position. He goes into coverage. He plays like an elite corner. But again, he can't play the outside and have that same abilities. It's the weirdest thing the way he plays, because he's not the big, big guy. you know, but he's a little oversized, I guess, compared to a lot of the outside corners out there. But yeah, hits good for his size, a very physical player as well. As far as the cons, short arms, which could be part of why he has issues on the outside there at that point. Like I said, he's not the slowest guy in the world, but he's not elite athleticism. If you got a guy who's like a Tyreek Hill kind of guy, he's going to burn him. He's going to burn him. Jalen Hyatt going to burn him. He doesn't have that kind of. And, you know, maybe that's just why he's better off in the slot, because those guys are typically just great route runners, not as much speed demons at that point. His hands do also get him in trouble at sometimes as well there. They're probably looking at about a fourth round at that point for him there. But listen, for a team, maybe I'm just biased because the Giants overall have had so many issues for so many years getting a decent slot corner. This is a guy that if he's available and we're going to pick, he could solve that role for us. I honestly think he can. He's that good.
So is his hands looking at the drill.
Yeah. Well, listen, sometimes you have to teach that.
On and off the field.
So, no, not off the field. So let's get into number six. And we got our first nickname we're going to go over as well, too. Ooh, I love nicknames. I just do. So, I know people are going to ask, why was he holding a Chucky doll? I don't know. That's just a video I had. That's what popped up for him. It's Dadrian Taylor Demison, DTD, he goes by. Which, you know, I want to say TNT whenever I see that. Like ACDC pops in my head when I start doing three-letter things DTD. Like that. DTD. At a Texas Tech, 5'11", 195 pounds. Another guy with no age listed there. He started at Texas Tech, though, in 2019. So, again, we could assume he's probably born around 2001. So, should be about 23 years old there. In 23, 13 games, 74 tackles, 5.5 tackles for loss, 1 sack, 3 interceptions, 5 passes defended, 2 fumble recovers, and 2 forced fumbles. 13 games in 23 with 73 tackles, 1.5 tackles for loss, 1 sack, 4 interceptions, 8 passes defended there with a 78.5 PFF grade. So that's a pretty good that's a pretty good PFF grade there for him there. As far as where he's at, this is that guy that you do put in the deep spot there. He's rolling in the deep, as Adele would say. So this past season, did 10 snaps at the line, 202 at the slot position, 4 on the outside corner, 113 at the box, and 485 at the deep safety. The guy is a ball hawk. You know, the numbers don't do him justice as far as the 7 interceptions he had at that point. This is a guy that just always seems to sniff out the ball if you watch him. He's very fast. He's great angles. He also excels on special teams as well, and he's a good tackler. As far as the cons to him, the first one is very obvious. If you notice in the very beginning, I said 195 pounds. He's small. That's small for a safety. That's like a corner is 195 pounds. You know, you expected him to put on a good 10, 15 pounds at that point to be even average. I mean, that's not even big, average.
I mean, that's also probably why he's pretty good with the deep ball.
And that's the problem. Do you really want to go ahead and take that away from him? Because that's what makes him special.
Yeah. Especially because, like you said, he's a ball hawk. And like, what do we mean by that? It's like, yeah, he's only got 7 interceptions, but he's also swatting the ball away. He's also getting in the way of the ball. Like he knows where it's at, and he has a good idea majority of the time to stop it and get in the way of it.
Yeah. And the other issues with him is he has issues with zone as far as play reads. And you know, as we talked about earlier, again, there's typically 2 categories of people. There's guys who are high motor, hardworking people that have great football IQ but aren't the most athletic. And there's the guys who are naturally talented at that point there and just have that abilities that you're either born with or you're not. He goes into the latter. So, you know, when I see issue with zone play, that tells me he needs to learn and gain a better football IQ overall by just watching a lot of film and learning what's going on at that point there. Sometimes you get guys. I don't know this guy. I'm trying to put him in this category as far as that and say this is what's going on 100%. But sometimes you get guys that are just, they're the most athletic person on the field, and they know it. They don't necessarily work as hard because they don't have to. And, you know, when I see a guy like this, that that's his issue, I wonder if that was just the scenario for him. Because he also falls for trick plays, which is another thing that typically is somebody didn't necessarily watch a lot of tape and everything at that point. So, again, I'm not trying to sit there and say he doesn't watch tape a lot. I'm not trying to sit there and say that he's, you know, doesn't have a high football IQ, because I don't know him. I just wonder if that's the scenario like that, because he is an athletic freak, point blank. He's an extremely athletic guy, and that's sometimes what you see with these guys.
Yeah,
and they learn as they mature, and people start catching up to them as they go up level by level, that they have to put the work in. They can't count on that athleticism anymore.
I was about to say, you hit the nail right on the head there. Is it some of these guys, like, they're so talented that they outclass everyone? They don't have to put their athleticism is way above everyone else, that they can beat other people's talent. But once they get to people in a different talent level, they have to take a step back and actually learn the techniques to beat talent.
Yeah. And I, you know, listen, if you, this again, I watched a decent amount of film. I watched some interviews on this kid as well. And one thing I saw is, and it's pretty obvious, I think, by watching the videos he had in the beginning there, he's got a good personality. He's got a lot of fun with it. He enjoys the spotlight. Ain't nothing wrong with that. So I don't mean that as a negative. Ain't nothing wrong with that. But people that tend to like the spotlight and have the spotlight, they tend to not want to give up the spotlight. And what I mean by that is that's extra initiative for him to work as hard as he needs to excel at that point there. And I think that's what you're going to see from him. I think he's going to put in the work. I really do.
I think that's called ego-friendly.
Yeah, and I think he's going to be a good – I really think he's going to be a good player in this league at that point. This is another guy I like. I like a lot of – honestly, I like a lot of the safeties in this draft here. I just don't think it's necessarily very top-heavy, and you have to kind of understand what you got. You know, there's people that fit certain holes, fit certain positions. This, you know, DDT is a I keep thinking I'm saying DDP by accident, yeah. Like going to Diamond Dallas Page here. But he's that guy – oh, I thought you're doing the yoga, the DDP yoga now. Is that what's going on?
Well, that's what he did before the Diamond Cutter.
I know, but that's what he does now. He does yoga.
Yeah.
He's a yoga. He's a yogi. But he's this guy that, again, you can put him in as a deep safety. You can pop him in the slot when you need to help coverage there at that point. But he's not the guy you're going to put at the line very often. He's not the guy you're going to go ahead and put in the box. He's not the guy you're going to have, you know, run up to that point to go help in run support. But if you put him in the right role in center field at that point, he's going to have a ball.
He's going to be a guy
that does well. Yeah. So, all right, let's get into the next one here. After we pay the bills and go over some of the comments, including Mean Dakota's comments.
Oh, Mean Dakota.
Mean Dakota.
Big old jerk.
Enjoying the show. Looking for more goofball action? Consider a membership at buymeacoffee.com/2giantgoofballs. Memberships start at just $5 and give you additional goofball access. One-time support payments also available starting at just $3. buymeacoffee.com/2giantgoofball.
All righty, let's get into the comments here. Connor asked about the Stephon Diggs trade here. We're going to get into that after we're done talking about the safeties and all, Connor. So give it a minute on that. So, Connor also says, I thought you said Bill Brady. I'm like, he was on Days of Our Lives. LOL. What's it? I don't know.
You watch Days of Our Lives?
Yes, like sand through the hourglass. These are the Connors of our goofball shows. Dakota says, what's up, you geeks? This man, you guys go way too hard into drafts on people you're not going to get. Listen, if we cover enough damn players, we're going to get some of them.
Absolutely. We're going to get probably 10% of the guys we cover.
Not even close to that. We'd have to have like 30 picks to do that. We know people we've covered. It's insanity. But listen, last year we covered Deontay Banks. We covered John Michael Schmitz. And we covered Jalen Hyatt. Did we cover anybody else that we got?
Definitely not Eric Gray.
Yeah, definitely not Owens. Definitely not Hawkins. Yeah, that might be it. Just three. But still, wait, listen. Yeah. We got three. And there's other players you wanted that were actually still available a lot of the times. And we just were like, no, go get so-and-so.
Why?
Go get so-and-so. We were even, and like I said, we weren't that bad with some of the late picks we even had as being, you know, good guys to get at that point. So I'm trying to think who else. Yeah, I think that was it.
Yeah, I think that's just the first.
I think that was the only three that we covered because we didn't do Jordan Riley. We didn't do Javarius Owens. Yeah. Nope. So we got three. Three out of seven, ain't bad.
Seven, ain't bad.
And then he's just boring, but he still always shows up, Dakota. And we appreciate you showing up, man.
How's the kid, by the
messing
way?
With this. Yeah, seriously, we haven't heard any updates. How's the new one they're doing? How's the new baby going?
You walking the dogs.
as we put back to him, yet you're still here, Dakota. let's see, Red Jello 420. I'm not sure what that name's supposed to mean. Something there. It feels like it's like a hidden meeting that I'm unaware of. Except the 420, I know what that is. I'm not that old. We had that back in our day as well.
Back my day.
Let's see. Put
do it before school Browns, and after.
Super Bowl 2025. What, smoke pot? Yeah, it's where we grew up. Pretty much what we do. He said top five teams going into the 2024-25 season. Asterisk owns. I think Browns, he said already. So we'll put, assuming he means Browns.
Yeah, he means Browns.
Yeah. Then he says Lions, Chargers, Bears, Patriots. Yeah, I'm definitely going to disagree with that top five pretty wholeheartedly. Yeah. There's no offense, Red Jello, but yeah, Bears being in the top four when Caleb Williams hasn't even thrown a pass in the NFL yet, it's a little crazy.
It's amazing. Kansas City Chargers just won two Super Bowls in a row. You're not going to put them in the top
five. They're not even there.
Yeah.
The Bengals get Burrow back, but let's not put them there.
Yeah. San Francisco,
has
been predicted to win Super Bowl for the past 2 years, but whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The Ravens, something like
Patriots.
That.
Patriots.
But a coach that.
That's a little ballsy.
Brand new head coach. Who knows what they're doing in a quarterback position?
Anyway. Nemo, what's up? That says Giants should draft Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers.
Depends on the draft.
All depends. Yeah, it all depends on who picks before us. I keep on seeing the occasional mock draft where like a guy like Drake May or Jaden Daniels somehow magically falls into a lap at six. And I don't see that happening. But if that were to happen, then Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers would be the wrong pick.
Or there's a good shot that I've heard in the grapevine that, Vikings trade up.
I heard it through the grapevine.
They go for a QB. Guess what? First four picks are QBs or whatever. Two receivers are coming down.
We'll see. Honestly, I keep hearing about this Arizona trading thing. I'm not so sold on Arizona trading. I'm really not.
No.
If I'm Arizona, I let Hollywood Brown go. I'm not going to pick up a quarterback, hypothetically. Why would I not want my pick of all these good receivers to go ahead and give Kyler Murray the best targeted weapon he's had since he's been in the NFL? Besides Larry Fitzgerald. But Larry Fitzgerald was like 40 years old when Kyler Murray
was. I was about to say, he was, yeah.
he was not the Larry Fitzgerald of his heyday of doing 1,200 yards.
There's Robert Kraft in the Patriots history. I mean, granted, Belichick's no longer there. They would probably trade down, and I'm pretty sure the Vikings will sell the house to go get.
I've heard that as well, and I think the only way they do that is if they don't like the third quarterback. Whoever that third quarterback is. Like, let's say, for example, if they say, I like Jaden Daniels and I like Caleb Williams. Anybody else I don't think is worth the third pick. Well, they're going to trade back. So, I would get that then. If you don't like the guy, then don't waste a pick on him. I don't know. I just feel like this team needs a quarterback. I mean, Jacoby Brissett to be their backup quarterback, or I guess he's right now the starter, technically. So, not a bad pickup at that point, especially if you want to not have to rush whoever you draft out there. But I find it hard to believe they're not going to draft a quarterback in the first round. I just find it very hard to believe. If they don't, I'll be shocked, honestly. I really will be. That'll be, as much as the rumors are there, I'll be shocked if they don't take one of the top three quarterbacks.
Yeah. I mean, if they get two more down the line, first round picks.
But it doesn't matter. You don't have a quarterback. It doesn't matter. Listen, I keep on hearing this debate, and I hear it all over Giants, fan groups and pages and all this kind of stuff here about, why are we getting a quarterback in this first round potentially? We got to build this team up and then get a quarterback. But you also see the other side, which is the side that, frankly, I'm on, saying you can do both. How do you even know what kind of talent you have if you don't have a quarterback? How many times we talk about a quarterback making the rest of the team look good. If you don't have that guy, how do you know if the guys are good? If you have a really crappy quarterback that doesn't know when to release the ball, is it the offensive line's fault he's getting sacked so often? Again, I'm not talking about our line last year. Our line was crappy. But again, if you look at the numbers, though, I could also make the complaint. We've talked about it. We talked about it, I think, after every game, how I kept saying some of these sacks were on the quarterback. Some of these sacks were on the quarterback. Not all on the offensive line. And again, that's part of it. So you want to keep building up the offensive line to what? That any quarterback can just sit back there like a statue and not get hit? Or eventually you just say, I gotta get somebody back there who actually can throw the ball. You know, do you want to keep on getting receivers? And receivers go, once I have a good group of receivers, that's when I'll go get somebody.
Yeah.
Your quarterback makes receivers good. And it's not to say that there's not guys who succeed, obviously, without a good quarterback. I mean, look at DeAndre Hopkins and how many years he played with crappy quarterbacks. You know, Larry Fitzgerald, we just talked about a minute ago. But you gotta go ahead and get a decent quarterback in to actually know where your room's at. You just gotta.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Neymar says also, do you think the Vikings trade? I think the Vikings will try their hardest to trade. What they do is depends on who they're else are talking to. To be very frank. Who knows? Maybe there's a smokescreen and Arizona goes ahead and gets JJ McCarthy and then goes ahead and trades Kyler Murray. You never know what's going to happen in the draft. Mm. Teams aren't stupid. They don't give out what their plans are. Guess what, guys? Sneak preview of the draft. We're going to draft this guy, then trade that guy. Like, they don't say that.
No.
Yeah.
No.
And O'Connor says, got to run in the woods of, in the words of Bo Brady. I'm out of here. Who is this Bo Brady? Yeah, you got the soap operas going here. Neymar says Vikings need a quarterback badly also. They do. Listen, they do. 100%.
They're worse than the Patriots, probably.
You can make the claim that they're probably the most QB needy team in the league right now. Because besides the first three picking, the Patriots, the Commanders, and the Bears, which all have a chance to get a top three quarterback, obviously, you got the Vikings, you got the Raiders, and you got the Giants there. The Vikings picked. Don't have who's their backup? Even I don't know. Is it the rookie they had last year who didn't do much because they lost? Josh whatever his name, Josh Downs. The Raiders
medical engineer.
The Raiders picked up Gardner Minshew. The porn stash is in Vegas now. And then obviously the Giants, while not great, Drew Lock and Daniel Jones are both. Listen, to be honest, they're both decent backups in this league is what they are at this point. So it's like we have two decent backups. We have options at that point. We can throw in if we had to. Who do the Vikings have? That's what I'm saying. He's not wrong. That is probably the most QB needy team in this league. If you take out the top three, because the top three, you figure get a QB.
Yeah.
That's kind of scary. That's kind of scary if you're a Viking fan. Like, what if nobody wants to trade up with you?
Where did they think of that? Like 20?
You know what? They got Sam. I forgot they got Sam Darnold. I had to look it up. Sam Darnold.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
but
he's also a backup.
He is. But I could easily put them and us in a similar position. We just happen to have two backup quality, you know, quarterbacks. They have one. But yeah, I mean, you guys got to scare you as a Viking fan. Not good to go into quarterback, you know, going with this quarterback room into the season. Lamar Adams says six. Oh, he's giving us his draft here.
He
says Juan Madunsay as a wide receiver. Cooper Bebe is the guard. Braylon Allen is the running back. Joe Milton, quarterback out of Tennessee. And then you got Ryan Watt, safety. Out of Texas, spoiler alert, he didn't make this episode. We did top 15, top 20, he probably would have made it, though. Gabriel Murphy, the edge of the UCLA, and Christian Boyd, the defensive tackle. I'm trying to remember where Christian Boyd's at. I don't know that one off the top of my head there, to be honest with you. The name rings a bell, but we haven't done much research yet on the defensive tackles yet. Northern Iowa, ooh, that's a tiny little school there. Not a bad draft overall, but it's hard to judge people's mock draft. I'll be honest with you guys. Like, I get this all the time. People send to me like, oh, what do you think of this draft? What do you think of that draft? But it's hard to judge a mock draft without knowing what the other options were. And I admit point blank that we've done the same thing in our own show. We do our mock drafts. We don't tell you guys the other options at that point just because you guys don't want a three-hour episode. Yeah.
It'd be more like a five-hour episode.
Let's go over all the options. I've seen guys do that live, and that's fun. That's cool. Maybe we'll do that in one episode here or something like that, but it gets a little chaotic at that point doing it that many. But overall, no, not a bad draft at all. I could definitely see where that would make sense. You know, if you can't get a quarterback at six, you can't get one at 47 at that point. Well, you got one of the best guards. If not, we called him the best pure guard of the draft because Barton is going to want to have higher, but he's tackled in college. And you got Roma Dunze, one of the top three receivers. You got Braylon Allen, who's I like him as a power back. Milton's an intriguing quarterback as a developmental kind of guy there. We'll talk about him when we do our tier three quarterbacks. I already did our first of the big six there. We'll go over some of the guys there. Watt, Murphy, and Boyd, I don't know too much on, but obviously, again, late round picks, you'd kind of throw crap against the wall and hope something sticks. That's what late round picks are. So not too bad. Neymar says, I think Giants, because we lost Sterling Shepard and Darren Waller. I don't disagree with you that we need another weapon. I think we can get a weapon at some point. This is a very good draft as far as receivers. I think part of my thought process is I still think Wandale's going to come back next year and be a 100 catch guy. I just really think that. I think he's got that ability if he can stay healthy. You kind of saw him get stronger and better as the year went on. Jalin Hyatt, I think if we have somebody who actually can, sit behind the line and throw the ball, I think we'll have a better season. You'll have a couple of guys that'll probably still be very good players. We just won't have necessarily a number one at that point.
Correct. And I'll hopefully with the offseason moves and acquisitions that we had so far, that line should be a lot tougher than it was.
Yeah. But also, who knows whoever gets dropped later on, too. There's always post-draft drops. Lamar says Joe Milton, QB Tennessee, is a sleeper in this draft. I'm not against Milton. I just haven't done enough homework on him yet. So I don't want to sit there and say that I would call him a sleeper. But yeah, I love it when people call out their sleepers, though, because it's like later on, I'm like, I was right. So if Milton becomes a stud, man, just pull up his video later on. I'm like, there you go. Here's proof. I said it.
As he sits behind the Aaron Rodgers.
No, listen, if he gets drafted by a team like the Giants, he's going to have a chance to work in and see what he does and have a chance to start at some point next year. Even as a mid-round pick, I mean, the Giants, I told you, they don't want to play Daniel Jones. I still think that. They don't want to risk getting that kicker, him getting injured and having to pay that much more money to him next year when we cut him. And, Drew Lock is Drew Lock. There's a good backup. He can win you some games as a backup, but he's not going to take you into the playoffs and take you, into winning games in the playoffs. He's just not that good. He is what he is.
I mean, it is interesting because, he sat behind Geno Smith, who was a comeback second string quarterback, who's now a starter in this league after a decade. I mean, who knows? Maybe Lock's got a little bit more something in the tank than we've all seen.
Yep. Who knows? Who knows? We shall see. Let's get into our top half, which is kind of our bottom half of the top 10 safeties. So next up here, we have number five, Kalen Bullock out of USC. All right. So again, out of USC, 6'3", 190 pounds, 20 years old. In 22, he played 14 games, 48 tackles, 5 interceptions, including one for a touchdown, and 5 passes defended there. In 23, 12 games, 63 tackles, 2 interceptions, again, including one for a touchdown, 7 passes defended, and a 71.5 PFF grade there. Listen, this is going to sound a little bad here, but I'm going to say it like it is. Playing the role of any secondary player in the Pac-12, to me, is the equivalent of playing most positions in the SEC. And what I mean by that is the Pac-12 is so pass heavy, it's not even funny. It's like half these guys don't even need a running back. And if they do it for screens and wheel routes and that kind of stuff. They use them like more like a slot receiver. And this guy he excelled point blank at coverage. And that's one of those things I like, but he's also very raw. And I can get why he is raw. There's some players I look at and go, this guy should have a handle on that. And he just doesn't. You know what I mean? But this is not that guy. This is that guy that say he doesn't have a handle on this or this yet. but we know why. And I'll get to that in a moment here. Mm-hmm. Here's his snaps by position this past year. One snap at the line. That's it, just the one. 249 at the slot position. Again, just one. At the outside corner position. 274 at the box. 320 at the deep safety position. So he's got some versatility there. But if you notice what they are, they're not
speed.
Yeah, there's position that count on his speed because that's what he's got. He's a former wide receiver. In fact, he went to college as a wide receiver. And that's why I say, as far as you understand, part of why he doesn't get some of the stuff quite yet, because he's only played a couple of years. Again, he's 20 years old. He's only played a couple of years at this position. He's still learning it. He's got the experience of guys coming out of high school at the safety position. That's what he's got. In fact, you can say juniors because he's played 3 years in college. He's got the experience of a high school junior. He didn't play it, you know, in high school. He played. He was a wide receiver. That's what he was. So got some issues because of that, though. But he's got elite athleticism. Elite. He's got the twitch. He's got the speed. He's got all that kind of stuff there. And he's a ball hawk, especially if there's a jump ball scenario because of his height. Again, he's 6'3". That's very tall for a safety.
Like you said, he's kind of almost built like, you know, a deep ball receiver, and that's what he's good at.
He's a deep ball receiver that doesn't eat much.
Correct. That's why he's 190 pounds.
that's the issue he's going to have with that. As far as the cons, not very physical, needs to add some strength, the things you expect me to say about a 190-pound guy. He doesn't diagnose plays very well yet. I think that'll come with time. I really do. I think this is a player in the making here. He's just very raw. I think he's going to go in the third round. And I think if you need somebody to play the deep safety position and you got a little bit of time, a year or two to develop somebody, this is an interesting guy that you can still pop in, you know, in nickel and dime coverages at that point. You can still pop him in at the slot and get him some experience at that point and get him to where you're comfortable starting him eventually as a deep safety because he's got the talent to do it. He does. And I think you're going to see him in the right position become a starting deep safety. And in the wrong position, you'll see him, somebody throw him out there and just throw him to the walls, and he's going to get burnt up, basically. He's just not ready. He's not ready. And it's not a knock to him. Again, it's lack of experience there. All righty. Next up, number four, Cameron Kitchens. Oh, yes. Kitchens. I keep wanting to say Kitchens because it sounds so good. It's spelled just like Kitchens almost, except for an N instead of a T. Out of Miami, 6 foot even, 205 pounds, 21 years old. In 22, 12 games, 59 tackles, 1.5 tackles for loss, 6 interceptions, including 1 for a touchdown, 6 passes deflected there, 1 forced fumble, 1 fumble recovery. This past year, just 10 games instead of the 12 in the prior year. But he did basically the same output, which is interesting. 59 tackles, 2 tackles for loss, 1 sack, 5 interceptions, including 1 for a touchdown, 5 passes deflected there, 1 fumble recovery, and a 67.8 PFF grade there. Now, again, I said about less games. He was carted off the field in September. Really carted. Like, this was one of those, like, you wait for the cart to come out there. Everybody, guys are kneeling on the field, hoping you're doing good and stuff like that. It was that kind of scenario with a head and neck injury. He came back and played later on in the season, so everything seems to be fine. But you're still going to probably want to look at the medical just to make sure there's no, you know, long-term risk there on the neck or anything like that there. As far as his snaps by position there this past season, 29 at the line, 113 at slot, 7 outside corner, 110 at the box, 379 at the deep. Here's the good and bad on him. And you'll understand why I have him graded so high, even though, again, 67.8 PFF grade. I'll be the first one to tell you. You guys know I like to give you guys that because I think it's a good judge. So I can't really show you guys much film as much as we watch film and all. It's not my film. I'll get
copyright. It's also not the end all be all when it comes to PFF.
No, it's not that. But it's a good judge of some of the stuff that stats aren't going to tell you, you know?
Correct.
And sometimes you're good at some things and not good at other things. And sometimes you're not used correctly. And that's what I think was the scenario with Kitchens there. He's got a good build, again, 6 foot, even 205 pounds. That's a good size for a safety there. He's extremely athletic. He's got good long speed and good short speed. It's one of these people don't always talk about. They look at like the 40 times, go, oh, yeah, he's got good speed. He's a speedy guy. It's not just
a load of speed.
You want to look at like the equivalent of the shuttle run back in school when you're trying to get the presidential fitness medal thing.
I don't think they do that anymore.
They don't do that anymore. They don't do that anymore.
Arnold Schwarzenegger's not in the early 90s like we were in school going, I'm going to bump you up.
I'm going to bump you up. Yeah. But I think that, you know, that's something that's not talked about, especially with a safety in a corner, just any of the secondary guys, because you have to be able to stop on a dime and change directions rather quickly. He does all that. He's also a ball hawk. We talked about the interceptions, 11 interceptions the past 2 years. That's really good. Here's where some of the issues come into be. Bad against the run, bad pursuit angles. Now, I'm only giving you two negatives, but what does that tell you? Those are very highly negative. And remember what I said as far, I think he was just put in the wrong position as part of why he looks like he looks at that point. There was no reason to put a Cameron Kitchen on the line 29 times and put him in the box for 110.
No.
That's like 140 plays at that point there that he is put in the wrong place. The wrong place, point blank. And if you want this guy to stop the run, he's not going to stop the run. That's not what he does. He is your ball hawk, deep safety. He is your cover guy at that point. That's what he does. So when you put him, you know, 140 times, you know, basically 20% of his plays at the wrong position, yeah, he's not going to look right when he's out of place.
Yeah.
You went ahead and put him there at the wrong spot. That's on you, Miami. I think if you put him in the right spot and play him deep and you pay him in the slot and keep him where he should be, I think you'd see a lot better tape and productivity out of him because he's where he should be. You know, it's the same as like you wouldn't take a jockey and put him on a basketball team and then take Manute Bol.
So cute though.
That'd make him a jockey. Oh wait, meh. Someone did make Manute Bol a jockey. Hold on. You ever see that video of that?
Of what?
You know what Manute Bol is, right? I forget sometimes. We are a football podcast, not a basketball podcast. So Manute Bol is, I think he's lost the record, but at the time when he played in the late 80s and all,
he's like 5'9".
He was the tallest player ever in the NBA. He was, what's his height? Let's see if I have it here. 7'7". God. That's how tall he is. 7'7". Now, Wikipedia says 7'6", but looking up Google, it says 7'7", with an 8'6" wingspan. Okay. He was a guy who was never good at anything, basically, except for block shots. Even rebound, he wasn't that good at. But that man could block a shot, because all he had to do was go like this.
I was about to say. Block the
shot. Yeah, and that's what he was. He was a center who just got a lot of blocks. But yeah, anyway, after he was done playing, he went out and became kind of a celebrity because he's a fun guy. He's kind of like, the gentle giant kind of thing at that point. He was a gentle giant. So he would go out and do different things. Like he put on all the gear and went to play with a minor league hockey team one game. And it was hilarious. He had the 7'7" man on skates. Like it's just the funniest thing ever. And he did one where, yeah, he dressed up as a jockey and went to go ride a horse.
The horse like, get the hell off me.
I'm hoping it was a goddamn Clydesdale. I forget. Like one of the Budweiser horses. Those things are freaking massive. Oh, my God. The poor pony. Oh, he probably couldn't even ride the pony. Just standing up and the pony gets up underneath him.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Anyway, you put a guy in the wrong position. You can't expect good things to happen. It's not going to happen. And I blame Miami. And I think if you put this guy in the right spot, you're going to see good things of him. He's got a lot of talent. He needs to learn. Like I said, the big thing of me is the pursuit angles. That's the one thing, because that's a coverage thing he's got to get better at. But do I want to complain he's bad against the run? No, I'm going to point it out, but I'm going to say he shouldn't be a guy you count on for run blocking. I mean, run pursuit, run stopping. Don't put him at the line. Don't put him in the box. That's not what he does well. So, all righty. Number three, as I get off my soapbox here. Get my soapbox there. Jaden Hicks out of Washington State. Let's go to that last picture of him. He's like, huh? What? Yeah, Jaden Hicks, 6'3", 212 pounds, 21 years old. So that's good size. That's real good size for a sixth year. In 22, 13 games, 76 tackles, 2 tackles for loss, 1 sack, 1 interception, 6 passes defended there with 1 fumble recovery. In 23, 12 games, 79 tackles, 6 tackles for loss, 2.5 sacks, 2 interceptions, including 1 for a touchdown, 4 passes defended there with a 1 forced fumble, 76.6 PFF grade there. As far as the snaps by position, 20 at the line, 103 at the slot, 9 at corner, 456 in the box, and 200 at the deep. Now, there is one trait that I look for that I love to see out of prospects. This guy has that trait, and it's that he improved each year in college.
But say he's a workhorse.
It means that. He tries. He's coachable. It also tells me he may not have reached his full potential yet because he's still been in that improving stage. Whereas I get a guy who maybe takes 4 years, 5 years in college, and the last 2 or 3 years, he's kind of plateaued. I'm like, well, is there room for growth? This guy, you see, and you go, there's room for growth potentially because he's gotten better each year. He's very good against both the run and the pass. He's not excellent at either one, but he's above average at both. He's smart. He's got good size. The issues with the most part is his athleticism and some of the mechanics at him in coverage. His hips aren't very fluid. His footwork in coverage isn't always the best, and he's just not the fastest. This is definitely, we talk about those two categories again. This is the guy that works hard and has a high football IQ. He needs to get a little bit better, like I said, as far as the hip fluidity and the footwork and coverage at that point. And I think because he's a guy that works his tail off, I'm not worried about that. I think that will come with time. He's the last of the guys that I think are probably a third round guy. I think you'll see a run on safeties in the third round. I really do. I got like 4 guys that I think we have listed here as third round picks. And I think he's a guy that you could put probably best in the box. I think that's best where he's at. But I think you can put him in the deep in a pinch. You can put him on in the slot position, and he probably won't embarrass himself there unless you get like a leaf slot receiver against him. Again, he's a guy that you put out there, and you can feel confident he's going to do his job. He's the lunch pail guy. That's what he is. I love lunch pail guys. This is what I do. Lunch. I do it well, and I'm just going to go out and do it every day. I want more of those on the team. They should all be Giants.
Did you say steak? Mistake.
No, I said mistake. I said mistake.
He got me all excited.
Needs to be phones for full-figured women.
Get all righty. Snyder.
We got 2 more to go, guys. 2 more to go. By the way, you know his Rob Schneider, should bring him up. You know who his daughter is?
Another Snyder?
L. King, the singer.
Oh.
You have no clue who she is, do you?
No.
You gave that look like I have no clue. Yes. Look her up. She was a singer. She's actually a pretty good singer when she's not drunk and fun at making an embarrassment of herself at the Grand Ole Opry. But, you know, Rob Schneider's her dad. She probably had a rough time. He just strikes me. I don't know why. He just strikes me as that guy that's really nice on the outside, but like really grumpy when the cameras are off and no one's around. I don't know why. He always has.
I think he at his older age now, like he sees some stand up. I think that's who he was his whole life. He's just like that. Yeah.
He's just, yeah.
And he's good friends with Adam Sandler and Chris Farley, so I'm pretty sure he had his party days.
I feel like Adam Sandler's that guy that gets along with anybody, though.
Yeah.
A lot, you know what I'm saying? Like you see people of all walks of life just get along with Adam Sandler. And he makes the right move. Like, he had that one guy who was in all of his movies and stuff like that, and he was in, whatchamacallit,
Steve Buscemi?
Grandma's Boy and stuff like that, too.
Oh, yeah.
And I forget what he did, but he did something really, really bad. And like immediately Adam Sandler just cut him off. He's like, I'm done. Like, he's just seems to be a stand-up guy, Adam Sandler. He really does. All right, let's get into number 2, though. This is not an Adam Sandler podcast. We got Javon Bullard out of Georgia. I'm going to talk about a guy with a clutch gene. Here's a guy with a clutch gene, Javon Bullard. Again, out of Georgia, 5'11", 195 pounds, 21 years old. Notice there's a theme of like smaller safeties in this draft.
Or the past 2 years.
Last year was receivers. The safeties were decent size. Maybe that's to compete with these smaller receivers.
I was about to say, they have to be smaller to compete with them.
I guess so. In 22, 14 games, 46 tackles, 7 tackles for loss, 3.5 sacks, 2 interceptions, 3 passes defended, 1 fumble recovered. 23, 12 games, 56 tackles, 1 tackle for loss, 2 interceptions, 5 passes defended there, 82.8 PFF grade. Again, we're talking SEC 82.8, guys.
Pretty darn.
I have to specify that every time we have a good SEC player, because I just have such respect for that group there. Played mostly, almost exclusively in the slot in 22. And, you know, he was a big part of Georgia's run in 22. He was one of their, you know, MVPs there of that run. And then came out and went to the safety position at that point and just crushed it this past year. Here's his positions by spot there. Stats by position in 23. 3 times at the line, 144 times at slot, 7 times at corner, 80 in the box, 362 in the deep coverage. I want Miami to take notice. When a guy excels at something, you utilize him. You notice what they did there. 83 snaps between the box and the line. Not 150, 83. There's a big difference. Maybe I'm nitpicking. Maybe I am. It is what it is. But I'm still on Miami messing things up. Anyway, pros and cons here. Pros, good length, great instincts, and just absolutely great in coverage. As far as his cons, inconsistent at times. Like every so often, he just makes a play, and you're like, what was that? Like, that's not a play this guy makes. This is not a mistake that he makes. He just is that guy, and he's going to be a head-scratcher moment every so often for him. Light size, not the best on angles there. But overall, he's great in coverage, and that's something that I think teams are looking at more and more. It used to be, can you cover a running back or a tight end, and can you stop the run? Now it's, you better be able to cover guys like a corner almost, because you got guys coming from all over the place. You have tight ends that come out like 210 pounds at that point. They're not like the 250 guys that are blocking at the line anymore. You know, this position has changed in the last couple of years, because this is a guy, to be very frank with you, would probably have to start at outside corner a couple of years ago and probably couldn't hack it like he can at this position. He's meant for this type of position. So I think he's a good player that I think he's going to develop into a very much an above average kind of player. And I think as we talk about Xavier McKinney, that's a good comp actually for him. He's a guy who's could play the deep the best, can go ahead and be consistent, but he's never probably going to be the Pro Bowl All Pro kind of player. I just don't think he necessarily has that in him. But I say that a lot because, quite frankly, I hate saying that about people that are in the draft. I hate people go, this is a guaranteed Pro Bowl caliber player.
Nothing's like, guaranteed.
Nothing is guaranteed. Exactly. Nothing is. And I don't like to put those kind of high, you know, kind of views on these kids who's never played a single game in the NFL yet. But I think he'll be an above average safety in this league. And that's not too shabby at that point to get. I think like second to third round he'll go. It just depends on how valued the safety position is by teams this offseason. It also depends on that, you know, the very first player we're going to talk about in a minute ago, where he goes. So we'll have to find out there. So let's not delay anymore. Let's just go ahead and talk about him. Let's get them something
let's
to talk
go.
About. Number Maybe one.
Talk about.
Number
fire
one is,
away.
That's two different songs. Hit me with your best shot is the fire away song. Why don't you hit me with your best shot? Number one is Tyler Newbin out of Minnesota. Wrong one.
That's okay.
Alrighty. So Tyler, 6'2", 210 pounds, 22 years old there. In 22, played 11 games, 55 tackles, 2 tackles for loss, 4 interceptions, 3 passes defended there with 1 forced fumble. This past season, 12 games, 53 tackles, 1 tackle for loss, 1 sack, 5 interceptions, 4 passes defended, 1 fumble recovery, and 1 forced fumble, an 89 6.2 PFF grade, guys. That's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
And while Minnesota is not let's say having the SEC schedule, they still got a tough schedule, guys. This is not the cakewalk team. This is not the team. This is not Western Texas Polytech Christian University of Abilene here. Okay, this is not what they are. You know, when you play in, you know, Minnesota, you are playing a couple of cakewalk teams. I'm wrong. None of them are 100% amazing. You know, games every single week there. But, you know, if you look at their schedule this year, yeah, they still had teams like Wisconsin, Northwestern, Ohio State. You know, they're still, you know, tougher teams they played at that point. So he has some good, you know, some good competition to go against here. Anyway, as far as his snaps by position this past year, 13 at the line, 84 at the slot, 5 at corner, 198 at the box, 468 at the deep safety position. And he is a deep safety. That's what this guy is here. Great range, prototype size. He's got that twitch. We talk about that quite often with offensive guys, especially with receivers, where they just have that ability to shift and just change directions real quick. He's got that ability. He's a playmaker. He's excelled on special teams, and he reads the quarterback very well. And if you're in that deep safety role, and you can watch the quarterback and figure out what you think he's going to do and be right, you're going to have a career in the NFL. There's a little bit of psychic kinetic powers that are some of the best safeties in this league. They just have that ability to watch the quarterback, understand you can't follow the eyes because the eyes will lie to you, and you can just figure out by body language and all where he's going. The only con to him is he doesn't have elite athleticism. I don't think that's as important from the you know, from the safety position, because he's shown to be able to still have really good range with that. And that's the big thing, is can you run over to left or right to go where you got to go at that point to make a play, whether it be for interception or the last line of defense there for stopping a running back. And he's shown he has that ability. This is the one guy, if you want to talk about a guy who could potentially become a Pro Bowl caliber, I said potentially because I hate when people say this guy is going to. Potentially. This is a guy that could potentially fit this kind of role there. I think he probably is going to end up going in the end of the first round, potentially, if somebody really needs a safety and they'll fall in love with them. But I think second round is probably more likely. You probably won't see any safeties going in that first night there. But again, if somebody needs one really bad, falls in love with them, and goes, I don't pick again till pick 60, whatever, and he's going to be gone by then. I want to get him now. They're going to go ahead and take him. And they're not going to be crazy at that point, because he's going to be a damn good player in this league.
100%.
So, all righty, guys. So, we're going to talk real quick about the topic that got brought up by our friend Connor there, even though he said goodbye, I think. So, I think he might have left. But, oh, well, we're going to talk about it now.
So, Connor, if you're listening tomorrow, we answered you.
He does a lot because he comments all the time afterwards. And he's like, oh, sorry I wasn't there live, but here I am. The Buffalo Bills traded today Stephon Diggs to the Houston Texans. The Bills received the second round pick, and that's in 2025, guys. That's not this year. That's the weird thing. They get a second round pick in 2025. They give up Diggs. They give up their sixth round pick this year and their fifth round pick next year. That's a bit weird. I'm a bit confused.
But yeah, from what I understand, it also frees up their cap this year.
Well, anytime you trade a player, he's off your books at that point. So, you know, I mean, let me see if Over the Cap has it on there as far as what the difference is. I just can't believe you gave him up for a
contract to 2027.
Next year.
I think it's 18 and a half this coming up year. So they don't have to get hit with dead money. That was my understanding.
So I can't see, because Over the Cap already put him in at this point for the Texans. So they already adjusted all the numbers at that point. So like he counts for $18 million against the cap for the Texans this year. You know, or $19 million, sorry, against the cap this year. But honestly, I think there's a lot of things behind the scenes that the Bills hid with this guy. I really do. I've not ever really been a Stephon Diggs fan. He's a great player, don't get me wrong. But he every single year it's like there's Stephon Diggs is unhappy. Stephon Diggs is unhappy. And this is not just in Buffalo, this is in Minnesota. Minnesota kind of let it come out though. You know, they didn't care as much to hide it. Buffalo did their best to kind of hide and go, no, he never said that. Oh, no, he didn't do that. Oh, no, this didn't happen here.
Yeah. He's a stand-up guy.
I'm just not so sure that if he's going to be a headache, that it's not the worst move in the world from moving around, you know, away from him at this point. But if you look at his numbers, it's hard to do that. But what's a little interesting is this was close to, like, actually, this was the worst year he had as a Bill.
And he also let go that 65-yard bomb.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In the playoffs.
He's 30 years old.
He's going to be 31, okay, right, for next season?
He'll be 31 during the season. So his contract goes until he hits 33, 34, around there, which is, yeah,
2027.
The contract extension they gave him extended him for too long age-wise there. And I wonder if they're starting to go, okay, hold on, we've dealt with this headache because he's freaking amazing and does 1,400 yards a season for us. He only did 1,100 last year. Maybe he's not as good. Maybe he's starting to slow down. And I don't know. I think the Bills have a better idea as far as that. I can get 100% on board with why the Texans would make this move, because the second he slows down and he's not the same player anymore, you can cut. You have no guaranteed money. That's all paid by Buffalo. There's no, you know, risk on your end.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure. Plus, I want him on my team because he seems to be a head case to me.
Yeah, and he's definitely will, because, I mean, you got Nico Collins, you got what's his face? Who's the other young kid in Houston?
Yeah, you got the kid out of Houston, Tank Dell.
And you got, yep, Tank. That's what it was. And then you have Mixon in the backfield. So, yeah, Tiny Tank, Sherman Tank.
Yeah. I mean, they're doing everything they can to basically put talent around a quarterback they didn't realize to be this ready to win this quickly. That's what it boils down to. They have that kind of respect for CJ Stroud going, you know what? He's on a rookie deal. So let's get him a top receiver. Let's go win something
now.
Let's see what we can do with this team. And yeah. I mean, think about it. You mentioned already, they added Mixon. They added Danielle Hunter on the defense at that point. You know, like they're kind of going into win now mode. Let's try to win on the rookie deal kind of mode. And I can't blame them at all. I think, like, it's stellar. And again, they gave up a second round, not even this year, but next year. So they still have their second round pick this coming year here. In fact, actually, that was the second round pick they got from the Vikings that they gave up. So they still have their second round pick next year. They gave up the extra one. They just gave up basically their first round pick, got some extra picks at that point there, gave up the second that they got for Diggs. And yeah, I mean, they're stacking picks. And if you're a good drafter, that's not a bad thing, because you got a bunch of stars in the offseason now. You get a bunch of young guys to fill in some holes here and there. You got to love the move for the Texans. Like I said, I worry about the head case that Stephon Diggs is. But when you have the ability to exit whenever you want, the risk is minimal. I guess the big thing for me, like I said, is Buffalo. Like, why are you giving him up for almost nothing? Like, that's a really low return to me. And I get it. High contract, 30 years old, known to be a head case. And I think that's probably all that stuff kind of weighed into that. But damn.
Could have got some. You didn't have to give up so much.
Keep in mind, too, they also lost Gabe Davis in free agency. I think he went to the Jaguars, if I remember correctly. So, yeah, I mean, they picked up Curtis Samuel. He is, at this point, their top receiver.
Which,
you know,
okay.
that's not good. You know, have Khalil Shakir, which was a third receiver last year at 600 yards. He could step in and do what Gabe Davis did. I don't doubt that. But Curtis Samuel is not stepping in and doing what Stephon Diggs did. It makes you wonder. It really does make you wonder. Are the Bills just automatically just going to go ahead and basically pull a pull a Minnesota Vikings like they did when they traded Stephon Diggs? They went ahead and got Justin Jefferson the next year with that pick that they got. You know, do the Bills now go, okay, we picked 28th overall, let's get like Keon Coleman or something like that and pop him in there and see if he can do the same thing?
Could be.
That's what I got to think at this point. But they got 10 picks here in the draft.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a lot. So, yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see what they do now. It really is. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah, and you know what? This was written last month, so they have 11 picks because they picked up a fifth round pick this year in this thing. So they have a first, a second. They have no third, but they have two fourths, 3/5, 2/6, and a 7th.
So maybe you're gonna use that to trade up or for trades.
You gotta want no, I don't know. I don't know if the trade up to get necessarily that. I think it's just to fill in holes. They lost a lot of players this year. They lost a lot of players. You know, I don't pretend to be an expert on the cap space for the Bills, but I gotta imagine that Josh Allen is starting to cost them because he got that big extension. And I gotta imagine it just they're starting to feel the squeeze a little bit there. Again, you gotta win and sign some big players when you can when you got guys in a rookie deal. Once they come off that rookie deal, yeah, you're in trouble. Yep, here it is. I was right. I'm going over the cap right now. His cap hit last year was $18 million. So his cap hit this year coming up 30. So you got $12 million he had to figure out. And guess what? They figured it out. They got rid of Stephon Diggs. So all righty. Like I said, I just wanted to kind of go over that real quick. I know it's kind of big NFL news, and a lot of people are asking why the Giants didn't do it. And it very simply, money and old. Done.
Yeah.
And again, I think he's a head case.
We'll see money.
Brian Dable and Joe Shane didn't want him. That tells you all you need to know. All right. Pretty so much. We'll be back again here for you guys tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as always. Tomorrow we do kind of a fun, different episode here for you guys. You want to kind of get a little away from the breakdowns as best we can here for you guys. Occasionally, we want to get all the information out there, but we wanted to break it up a little and not make it, you know, boring and monotonous by doing the same things over and over again with just different positions here for you guys. So tomorrow we're going to do an episode on trade scenarios for the Giants. What options do they have to trade in the first round specifically? You know, will they trade up potentially to get one of the top three picks? If they did that, what would they have to give up? Would they trade back a little bit and go get a quarterback just, you know, a little bit further on down the line there, like one of the mid-round picks? Would they try to, you know, draft a receiver and trade back up into the first at that point to get a quarterback? That's the kind of stuff we're going to be giving you guys information on. Like, this is what they would have to give, you know? So let's go ahead and get into the rest of the comments here, because we got Mr. John S. Anderson himself there. I see in there. And
keep joining us.
And of course, Lamar's got some more comments as well. So I want to go over everybody's, you know, questions there as well. So let's get into that. So first up, we have John says, I heard wide receiver Clifford Franklin from the replacements is coming out of retirement with QB Shane Falco. And they want to be a New York Giant. Well, here's the thing. They can't be a New York Giant because those are two people. Yes. Yeah.
It's just pluralized Giants.
That's proper English, John. Lamar says, do New York Giants get two comp picks for Barkley and McKinney in 2025? We will not, from everything I'm reading here. Keep in mind, we signed some players, so that goes into that formula. From what I'm hearing right now, we'll get a 4th-round pick for McKinney, and we won't get anything from Barkley because of the players we signed. Which, again, I don't know why we didn't just trade Barkley when we had the chance to get something for him. I was hoping we'd get a comp pick, and I can still say, oh, they didn't do it because they were getting a comp pick. Nope, we just let him go for nothing. Fun.
Pretty much.
Yeah. John says, Lamar, I'd love to see Penix Jr. with Adunze. It'd be like Burrow and Chase hookup. I don't know if I want to go that far, just because Burrow and Chase have already proven themselves in the NFL and be top end talents, both of their respective positions. They still got to prove in the NFL, but yeah, there'd be familiarity there, and that definitely would help that's for sure. John says, must be delay in Facebook. It has the closed captioned up before you finish your sentence. I think it's called closed captions. Yeah, it's the closed captions. Go on to YouTube. There's been a couple issues with Facebook lately, too. Plus, Facebook has not been very nice to us lately for some reason. So I don't know why. Facebook used to be our biggest thing video-wise, hits-wise, and they're like one of our lowest now all of a sudden. It's not just because the other stuff has grown. It's just for whatever reason, their numbers, they're not shooting us out to as many people anymore. So therefore, we're going on Facebook strike. Watch this to the less people now. We hurt you. Lamar got the thumbs down. And John says, why thumbs down, Lamar? And then he says, get to the chopper. Then he says, Sully, remember when I said I killed you last?
I lied.
He says, Arnold has a pony and a donkey in his house. He eats meals with them, LOL. Well, that's okay.
He eats them four meals?
Do they eat the same meals, or does he eat them four meals? Exactly. Is he eating the pony and the donkey? I'm so confused. John says lunch pail, LOL. Listen, that's a thing. He says no idea. I think L King says no idea who she was either. He said he's just like you, Drew, LOL. I am not. Wow, I'm not negative behind closed doors. If anything, I am the life of the party. Let me let you know that right now. And Rob has gone drinking with me plenty of times. He can attest this. I'm the loudmouth person who's making an ass himself somewhere in the corner. Usually, it is. Hey. Rob, like, that's
I'm also the ass. Yeah, I'm the ass
surrounded by assholes.
Keep firing, assholes.
And John says, "I don't know, man. I would lose that glove. You look nuts. What glove? I
wonder. No, we're talking about Grandma's boy.
Oh, okay.
The Halloween party, or that's Wedding Singer.
Oh, yes. So that's glove line was from the Wedding Singer, Adam Sandler. Let's see. Then he says, but it was all bullshit. It was a goddamn joke. And when I think of you, Linda, I hope you're effing choke. He says, someone please kill me. I'm on my knees. Pretty please kill me. I want to die. Put a bullet in my head.
You're going to jinx the Van Halen. They're going to break up.
Let's see. He says, I think the second is because Texans don't have a first this year, I believe. No, they traded their first round pick to the Vikings. That was the 22nd pick that the Vikings picked up. So the second round pick they're giving up in 25 is the pick they got from the Vikings. John says, why is there dead money if you trade? He never answered that. Connor asked. The reason why there's dead cap this year is because of the fact that they did trade him. So when you have a player, you can do the guarantees and everything split amongst those number of years that the contract is. So let's say, to make it easy, if you gave him $50 million guaranteed in the five-year contract, there's $10 million each year in guaranteed money that goes against the cap. If you cut him after 2 years, well...
still got $30 million.
You still got $30 million. That goes against that cap, along with the $10 million you were going to have to begin with, because you have to get rid of that. You can't still spread it now. You got rid of the player. That's if you trade him or if you cut him. It still works the same way as far as that. Now, sometimes the numbers are a little bit different depending on how the contract is written and stuff like that. So that part is like you need the capologist for. I don't pretend to be the capologist. But yeah, they're going to take a $31 million cap hit this year for Stephon Diggs. They got rid of a lot of players, you know, and I think that they're going to take the hit this year because, again, Josh Allen's on a bigger contract now. They can't afford to keep paying him $18 million. They get a little bit of cap savings by that over the 2 years. They free up a good amount of money next year because they're freeing up, you know, $18 million next year where they can try to get build around and get some more players there to go ahead and get on Allen's side there. And then, again, they're getting rid of a guy who's a headache. What I do find a little weird is that they didn't just take the hit. You know, if you traded him post June 1st, it's the same as a post June 1st cut when you cut a player, and you can split that $31 million over 24 and 25 at that point. So basically, you know, $15.5 million. But the problem is they only save $2.5 million a year at that point. They just wanted to bite the bullet, move on, and be able to reload because they already lost a lot of players this year. They have a ton of draft picks, as we said. So their plan is to just get a bunch of young players, see what you got. And then next year, you got some money at that point. You freed up at that point to go ahead and, you know, equivalent for the difference in between what Allen's getting paid now while still not getting it where you can't get free agents down the line because of that. So, again, there's also things behind the scenes. And there's definitely behind the scenes with Stephon Diggs. He's been a headache in Minnesota. He's been a headache ever since he got to Buffalo. They just dealt with it because they were winning and he was producing. If you look at what he did last year, Stephon Diggs did not produce as much as he had in years past.
Correct. Yeah, he's just shy of 1,100 yards, whatever it was, compared to his average of 14.
Yeah, and
he had the most receptions over the past, I think, 3 or 4 years.
Was he?
Yeah.
If he did, it's probably just because of health.
He was the leader in receptions.
On the team, you're saying?
No.
You're saying the NFL?
He had, I think, like 10 more than Tyreek Hill. And there was something in between.
Let's see. Most catches since 2019, we'll say. Yeah, 19, 20, 20. No, say 20. So 20, 21, 22, 23. That'll be four. Yeah.
It's like 445.
He's got 445 catches. Yeah. He beat Davante Adams by four. But yeah, he's
also because
the least amount of.
That's because Davante Adams had went to Oakland.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's exactly what it is. Now, here's the interesting thing. Do you know when the last 100-yard game that Stephon Diggs had as a Bill was last year?
Week 6.
Obviously it was last year.
Oh, last year. Yeah, week 6.
Yeah, week 6.
Oh yeah.
Well, he went week 7 through 17 where he did not have a 100-yard game. The first 6 games of the season, he had 620 yards. So he had 560 yards over the next 11 games. Yeah.
That's why he was freaking out a little bit.
And that was around the time when they went ahead and fired the OC and got Joe Brady in there to be the new OC and everything 6. There. Yeah. So
week 6 is when they fired him. And then they brought the running game in. They also played in Buffalo. Don't forget, there was a couple Snowmageddon games that they played in where it was more of a run-heavy game than a pass-heavy game.
They also got in, don't forget, they got in Dalton Kincaid this year, who is a really good pass-catching tight end, and he started coming into towards form towards the end as well. So I think that's what I really think a lot of it is just the fact that he became more of a headache than what they want to deal with, and they see that he's kind of declining.
Well, that I mean, look at it. Look at they started off the first 6 games terrible, coming off being such a good team the year prior. They fired their head coach. They took their number one receiver. They kind of, I don't want to say sideline him because he's still playing the game. He still had quite a bit of catches, but they won way more games than they did in the first 6 games.
Oh, yeah.
Were they 1-6 or not 1-6, but they're 2-4 or something in the first 6 games, and then they won like 5 in a row?
Yeah. Yep. Let's see. I actually have it up right now.
They actually started running a lot.
3-2, 3-3. Yeah, they were 3-3 after 6 games.
Okay. And then it was like 6-1 or something.
1-2, 3 losses the rest of the way. So 11-8-3 the rest of the way.
Yeah, but was it 6-1 at one point?
It was.
Okay.
It was, cool. I believe. No, actually it was not. They lost week 8 and week 9. I think they ended the season. That's what it is. They ended the season 6-1 the last 7 games. That's what you're probably thinking. So again, there's a lot of behind the scenes we don't know about on that one. I can guarantee you that. But the more and more you look at things, it made sense to move on from him. What made less and less sense was the contract they gave him.
And you know what? If you're going to draft a lot of young talent in this draft, do you want the head case to kind of be the role model of behavior going forward?
Yeah, they signed him to a 4-year extension in 22 for $104 million. Yeah, that's a little crazy.
Yeah. Cray, cray.
It's 4 years. He was already signed on for 23 and 22 at that point. They signed until he's like, he'll be 34 when that contract's up. Like, there's no way he makes the end of that contract. So, all righty, guys, that's enough Stephon Diggs. So we're at a Giants talk here, not a Stephon Diggs talk. Not an Adam Sandler talk.
Wrong.
So again, we'll see you guys tomorrow. We talk trade options there in that first round for the New York Giants. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Appreciate as always for listening in. As always, again, we are live on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, not Instagram today because I forgot to hit the button. Don't count on us for Instagram. If we just go on Instagram, we go on Instagram. They make me jump through damn hoops to do a live. So that's another meta issue there. First we're complaining about Facebook, now Instagram. But I always recommend YouTube at that point for us. So again, we're on all those platforms anyway. And of course, Rob's favorite. I can't forget Rob's favorite. My
Truth's LinkedIn page.
Oh, yes. And as always, we are available on all the audio podcast platforms as well. Real quick to answer the question. So Texans will get dead money if they cut him later. Texans only get $18 million in dead cap space if they cut him this year. After this, there's no more guaranteed money for him. So $18 million is a cap hit every single year. But if they cut him, they can go scot-free with no problems. All right. Anyway, we'll see you guys all again tomorrow. Appreciate you guys as always. And as always, Giant fans.
Go G-Man!
Thanks for listening to Two Giant Goofballs,
a New York Giants podcast.
We appreciate your support. If you made it this long, you must have enjoyed it. So, I am sure you have followed us on all the social media platforms. Of course, you have subscribed to the show on your favorite app as well and given us a top rating. Right? Right? Right?